We arrive here today to debate at social distances from each other.
There's no doubt that the old politics of the two-party system is now gone and over.
I don't need lectures from you or anybody on the Sinn Féin side of the house.
We're very reluctant to say what's red lines, but we do have to take climate seriously.
There's going to be constant criticism, there's going to be a lot of disappointment, and whoever goes into government is going to be unpopular. Okay.
Hello, and you're very welcome to this special edition of Your Politics podcast, where I'll be speaking to women in politics. Well, out of the 160 TDs in the Dáil, there are just 36 women compared to 124 men. So why are women so reluctant to enter into the profession? Well, today I'm delighted to be joined by the Social Democrats TD, Holly Kearns. You're very welcome to the podcast. Can you begin by talking me through your journey into politics? Against all the odds, you were the only woman elected in all of Cork City and County in the last general election.
I know, in 2020, it's difficult to believe. And the penny didn't drop till after the election that I was the only woman. You know, I suppose I didn't decide to go into politics. I think sometimes you end up there. I think a lot of politicians would probably say that. I had lived abroad for a good few years. I was working in disability support services. And I moved home to take on my family farm and business. And I came back a little bit earlier than I planned or than what was convenient in order to canvass and vote for marriage equality. So I'd always been kind of engaged in social issues, maybe. And then a few years after I'd moved back, the referendum to repeal the 8th came around and I was even more involved in that. Became a canvass lead in Cork South West. And I knew from knocking on doors that the presumption, and I know from growing up there and living there too, the presumption that everyone in rural Ireland is conservative by default isn't only untrue, it's a little bit insulting. Mm. and it was clear to me that there was going to be a yes in Cork South West for abortion care. And there was. And that was everyone saying, no, that won't, you know, this is a very conservative area and a very rural constituency. It's kind of ridiculous notions people have.
So did you feel then that there was an appetite for change?
Absolutely. Huge appetite for change. And it was also quite a light bulb moment in terms of, okay, like you're frustrated about something, knocking on doors, asking for votes can affect a really positive change. Like that's actually how you do it. And having finished school in a recession and the way Irish politics is, it just doesn't really, I don't think it really engages young people. I don't think it really speaks to young people. It doesn't listen to them. It doesn't hear them. You know, so as a young person in Ireland, because I'd left then when I was a bit older, I thought the word political party was almost like a dirty word. And I just genuinely had this impression that they're all corrupt. I had no interest in that, you know. And then there was this kind of, you know, moving back to Ireland and seeing, you know, the society was changing and Irish politics wasn't really moving that quickly with it or wasn't keeping up with the people. I think Irish politics is so behind people in Ireland so often. And yeah, there was just that realisation that like actually the majority of people want something, a new style of politics.
And this was borne out in the election because Cork South West, where you were elected, is traditionally a Fine Gael stronghold. It was, I suppose, wasn't an easy task for you to take a seat. Were you, I think you were shocked, weren't you, when you took the seat? Can you bring us back to that day?
Yeah, the general election seat.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, like obviously I think anybody who goes for election will tell you, you have to on some level believe that you're going to get a seat or you can't canvass for 12 hours a day in February. Mm. You know what I mean? You have to, some part
when
of you
the weather
has
is
to believe
bad.
You're going to do it, yes. And when you're knocking a door and asking someone for a vote, you have to believe you can do it too. Well, it's a little bit disingenuous, you know. So I suppose honestly a part of me did think that I would do it. I think you have to think that. But obviously, you know, I think the Mick Clifford podcast was saying it would be the mother and father of all election shocks. I was written out of loads of the predictions. The odds were, you know, a lot of people did not very well in the bookies after that. Anyone who bet on me, because the odds were stacked up against me literally and metaphorically. And, you know, people would say that that's a Fianna Fáil seat, that's a Fine Gael seat, and that's a Collins seat. And of course, the original Michael Collins was from there. So Fine Gael, it's kind of considered as their heartland. But I was always saying it's not the Fine Gael seat, it's Cork South West seat, and it's not a Social Democrat seat now. You know, it's still Cork South West seat, and it's up to them, you know, whose seat it is the next time.
And another aspect to the election was your relationship with Fianna Fáil's Christopher O'Sullivan. It was highlighted a lot in the media before the general election.
Do you think that that perhaps maybe attention helped the two of you get elected?
It's really hard to know that. Like, you never know. Was it that ad in the local paper? Was it that canvas? Was it, you don't know what got you votes and what didn't. But it wasn't something that we were prepared for at all, the level of media attention that it got. I, to be honest, I really disliked it, and it was the worst part of the election campaign for me. We didn't get on the ticket because there was a sitting Fianna Fáil TD there, and it was a woman, and that was, you know, they can't meet their gender quotas. So popular opinion was there's no way he'll be put on the ticket. The day before the election was called, he was added to the ticket, and we weren't prepared for the media frenzy around it. I didn't know it'd be that big a deal, nor did I want it to be a big deal. You know, it was, and you know, oftentimes on canvases and stuff, people would say to me, "I'm not voting for you. You're only Fianna Fáil anyway," and that was frustrating because, I mean, I wasn't. Like, if I was only Fianna Fáil anyway, I probably would have joined Fianna Fáil because it's much easier to get elected in a big established party that has a canvassing team for every box in the constituency, instead of starting out with forming a branch with three of us. You know, obviously I wasn't just Fianna Fáil, but still, even last week there was, I was the most trending, my name was the biggest trend on Twitter because...
I did see that, yeah.
Yeah, of criticism for being married to Christopher. Now, we were never married. He's my ex-boyfriend, but I'm still getting criticism for being married to him. And I think, for one, it's very gendered. Like, a lot of people pointed out that his name was barely mentioned. But I'm trending in Ireland for being married to him, which, for one, isn't true.
So you're not together anymore?
No.
Okay. And how do you deal with that then, that social media attention? That must be difficult.
It is. And I suppose I think it's... It kind of is just a metaphor. You know, you look at that Twitter storm, for example, it's a metaphor for how Irish politics is kind of going. This cancel culture has become so big, it's so polarised. I think if you disagree with somebody's opinion, are you better to talk to somebody about that opinion and try and bring them along rather than to cut them out and cancel them and say that they're a terrible and horrible person? I don't think that's helpful. And I don't think that, particularly in relation to politics, you need to be bringing people along, not cutting people out.
And since you were elected, you have raised a number of issues in the Dáil. You've really had, I suppose, your finger on the pulse in terms of issues that interest the public, including, I suppose, questioning the Taoiseach on maternity leave or maternity issues, questioning the Children's Minister, Rodrigo Gorman, on the Mother and Baby Homes Bill, and also raising concerns about funding for the greyhound industry. You're obviously very passionate about those areas.
I am, and I feel like so much of it has come up in the first few months, things I felt strongly about. But I remember before getting involved in politics, I always had a big frustration with Irish politics, and the politicians would always say what they think that you want to hear rather than what needs to be said. And I always wanted somebody who would say what needs to be said. You know, I'd rather that. You can't be this catch-all, better not lose a vote. It's so problematic in terms of how you end up behaving as a politician if all you're thinking about is votes. So I came into this with the kind of, I would rather not get re-elected than not do what I perceive to be the right thing, which is sometimes say things that don't keep everybody happy. And I think that's really important in Irish politics. And there's always been a gap in terms of that, in my opinion.
You think politicians say what their electorate want to hear, basically.
And also oftentimes what they think their electorate want to hear. And I'm not entirely sure that they're right.
And do you think that that might change with you as time goes along and you want to be re-elected?
I do want to be re-elected. But like I said, I would rather not get re-elected than get re-elected for that. You know, I think we need a new style of politics now, and I think that people are ready for it, even down to just things the way this kind of parish pump politics, being a super councillor when you become a TD, all of that stuff doesn't actually benefit Irish society or people in your constituency, but it does give off the impression that it does. And it takes something to just point that out and change it. You know, it has to start somewhere, and we need to call that out.
Just recently, there was controversy after a member of the Irish Greyhound Board tweeted comments in which he described you as an ignorant little girl, and that was after you called on the Dáil not to approve funding for the greyhound industry. How do you deal with comments like that?
Yeah, in this instance, because it was, you know, a member of a state board, you know, and initially, like, I see that kind of commentary all the time on social media. I didn't take any notice. I didn't realise he was a member of a state board. But when a Fine Gael TD apologised for liking the comments online, I suppose I couldn't really just ignore it like you normally would. And it's important not to, particularly when it's a member of a state board. So I went into the Dáil, and I wanted to put on the Dáil record that in 2020, an appointed member of a state board referred to an elected woman in that way, much to put in the Dáil record. That happened in 2020. That it was inappropriate. He also made reference to my remarks being waffle. It's another quote from the tweet, which referred to me as an ignorant little girl. I also wanted to put on the Dáil record that none of my remarks were waffle. They were all based on fact, a lot of which came from the Irish Greyhound Board itself. And I invited him to a debate because, basically, when you're defending the indefensible, you often resort to personal attacks. And to resort to personal gendered attacks was even lower. So I wanted him to come and have a debate with me, which he hasn't.
You've spoken about the need to put a stop to the idea of parties having this token woman on their ticket in general elections.
This is a really difficult subject to talk about because, you know, I think it can be quite emotive when we talk about gender quotas. But the reality is gender quotas work. And we talk about, you know, female participation in Irish politics and not gender quotas. They're the wrong way to go. People need to get in on merit and this kind of narrative. We have been waiting 100 years since the foundation of the state for better equality in Irish politics. It's not happening. So how long more are we willing to wait when you see things like no women at the decision-making table in relation to the restrictions around COVID-19? All of this stuff, you know, women's sports, that last week, restrictions in maternity hospital, no provisions for maternity leave for female TDs, senators, ministers, councillors. How long are we going to wait when, yes, gender quotas aren't ideal. They're a blunt instrument that nobody likes. The presumption that women like gender quotas is incorrect. Nobody wants to be a gender quota, however they work. So even this whole issue around Minister Helen McEntee being the first minister of cabinet to be pregnant, which I think is fantastic. Society needs to see that. How have we not seen that in 2020? But it's a very difficult thing to manage. And in terms of, you know, we require massive constitutional change to allow somebody else to speak on your behalf in the Dáil chamber, to vote on your behalf. All of that stuff is, we don't know how to deal with it. What we also don't know how to deal with is a society that will perhaps judge you at the ballot for not being present.
But on the other hand, we do have a lot of female representation, particularly in government. As you mentioned, Minister for Justice Helen McEntee, who is front and centre in the coalition at the moment. We have had lots of female ministers over the past few years.
I love your optimism, and it's great to see female ministers. Absolutely. You have to see it to be it and all that. It's brilliant. But the reality is, the Taoiseach is Micheál Martin. His party returned 5 female TDs out of 37. That's the, you know, the Taoiseach's party at the moment. So, I mean, we have a long way to go. That's the reality. And yeah.
You mentioned there the lack of maternity leave for female politicians. And it's obviously, as you said, in the spotlight now with the Justice Minister, Helen McEntee, announcing that she is expecting a baby. You've been raising this issue for a long time in the Dáil, but isn't it the case that female ministers or any female politicians while on maternity leave do still get paid?
Yes. So it's the same on the council. What you do is you get a sick cert when you give birth. It's ridiculous.
And do they have to get a sick cert?
Well, if you're missing days, you need a reason for being absent, or if your days wouldn't be clocked up or whatever it is. The reality is that you can't then take time off. So you can take some sick leave. What you can do at the moment is you can put in, a secretarial assistant in order to carry out some of your duties in your constituency to help you with that. But like I said, it would require constitutional change to allow somebody to replace you in any parliamentary role that you do. So in terms of being in the Dáil and speaking, in terms of voting, anything like that. So at the moment, you can't take actual leave and take time off. You have to be there or you have to miss votes. That is why I offered to pair with Helen McEntee, because at the moment, that is one of the only solutions in terms of missing votes. And the last thing I think anyone should have to think about when they're starting a family or growing one is, oh no, I'm going to miss a vote.
Why did you offer to pair for Minister McEntee? Do you think that's making comments like this might attract some positive attention? Like, what was the reason behind it?
It was that reasoning that imagine thinking about that when you're on maternity leave, that unfortunately, the first time ever a minister is giving birth to cabinet, so there isn't a provision. And it's really the last thing she should have to worry about. And in all honesty, I'd expect someone to offer to me if we're the other way around. I don't think that's a big ask. I think it's a reasonable, fair thing to do, you know.
What changes would you like to see in the area of maternity leave? What do you think could help female politicians to, I suppose, be able to take maternity leave?
So we can look at different options. Like, we'd have to have a referendum in order for people to be able to vote remotely. And I think that would be really important. We've also seen the you know, in the case of a pandemic, how that can be useful. And Fine Gael's Jennifer Carroll McNeill has been working on a bill in relation to that. I'd be supportive of that 100%. In terms of, you know, more supports, I think maybe a parliamentary assistant role filling in for you rather than a secretarial assistant role would be a good step. The things that we can't necessarily address with a legislative change or a bill or a thing is society perhaps judging women for being on maternity leave. That's the thing that's difficult to address. So I would suggest that we talk about parental leave and male TDs, senators and councillors taking the same type and nature of leave as women do.
You're from a farming background and you've a master's in organic horticulture. You regularly raise farming issues in the Dáil. How do you think farming issues are dealt with by TDs? You know, I know you're passionate about different areas, including climate change, but the way farming is dealt with and debated, what changes would you make there?
This is one of my biggest motivations going into politics. So obviously, initially, injustice around marriage equality, injustice around repeal, those injustices have been dealt with. So it wasn't the one to continue. But the injustice around climate change and climate action is the biggest injustice facing the next generation and, in my opinion, facing farming communities.
Yeah.
So in reality, farming and coastal communities will be the hardest hit by climate change. But as a result of a political narrative, they're the communities most resistant and scared of climate action. And that is a result of a false narrative consistently pushed out, in my opinion, by the Department of Agriculture, Food and the Marine. So we saw even in the programme for government talks, I think it was Simon Coveney took to the airwaves to say that a reduction in emissions would decimate Irish farms. That is misleading and scaremongering. So if we don't reduce emissions, if we don't, in order to take climate action, we have to fulfil our role in the Paris Agreement. We've already signed up to that. That's not a radical new thing in any programme for government. We need to do that. We should do that. We're obliged to do it. The programme for government clearly sets out to not reduce emissions in the agriculture sector. It says to continue to work towards emission efficiency, which means no reduction in overall emissions. They're very different things. Now, Ireland is so unique in a European context in that 33% of our emissions come from the agriculture sector. And
but
if we don't reduce our emissions...
Farming is a very important industry for the Irish economy, and that is how the government looks at it, as well as reducing emissions.
But if we're looking at it like that, it's hugely important for us economically, and I completely agree. Like I said, I grew up on a farm. It's very important for my local economy and my family, you know. But in reality, the reason Ireland, one of the reasons Ireland does so well in terms of our agricultural output is because we have a reputation for green, you know, origin green, all of this stuff. If you think about how we're perceived to the consumers around Europe and even in Ireland, it's that green brand. Now, we're one of the least green countries in terms of our agriculture now. We have the least amount of land under production without the use of chemical inputs and chemical fertilisers in the world. In order to actually have a sustainable model, we can't keep going at the rate we are. For example, if you look at if we diversified more. So I love that we have a good dairy sector.
How do you get a beef farmer in County Leitrim to diversify?
Well, see, beef is actually far more sustainable. But our model of our agriculture policy has been decimating Irish beef farms, not, you know, for a long time now. So it's actually the vast majority of beef farmers. You saw them protesting the length and breadth of the country last year and the year before. Like, it's unsustainable to be in beef now financially. Because
and what is more sustainable?
So, for example, I think we should have a brilliant beef sector. I don't think we should be all focusing on promoting dairy and slowly closing down all of our beef farms. I think we should, you know, Irish beef should be a prime product as well. And, you know, there's been a consistent lack of political will to address the beef farms.
But is it not methane released from cows that is causing the issues in terms of, 100%, of climate?
But beef farms are traditionally and across the board less intensively stocked than dairy farms. That's a fact if you look at the figures. And in addition to that, for example, we have a brilliant climate for growing food here. Brilliant climate, brilliant soil. Most of our soil is degraded now from the intensive agriculture production that we've carried out, and our soil quality is very bad now, but it can be replenished over time. But for example, Holland, a very small country, it doesn't have quite as good a growing climate as us, produces the most, second most vegetables in the world. It's a tiny country that doesn't have as good a climate as us.
And I suppose to make changes, real changes in those areas, you know, Holly Kearns, you have to really be in government. The Social Democrats has 6 TDs.
Yeah.
What are your chances, do you think, of being in government next time round? And if you did have the chance to go into government with one of the other bigger parties, would you take the risk, considering you might not have the say that you might want?
Yeah, like I remember so after this election being disappointed, like going into opposition and like, oh, but what can you achieve? And feeling really quite disheartened in that sense. But I suppose the reality is you can achieve more than I thought, like with, you know, in terms of pressure around the image-based sexual abuse legislation, around the mother and baby homes, getting the Minister's Release to keep copy of the archives, things like that, putting greyhound racing front and centre as a national debate again. You can make change, but obviously nobody wants to stay in opposition. That's just the reality. And like, you talk about, you know, would we have a chance and in terms of having a small number of TDs, if I had a euro for every time somebody told me I had no chance of getting a local seat, and I did, getting a general election seat, and I did, I fully think that the Social Democrats will grow far more than anybody predicts that they will. I think we'll surprise everybody again. We're used to defying the odds.
What are your ambitions? Do you have leadership ambitions for the party? Where do you see yourself and the Social Democrats in, say, 10 years down the line?
Certainly in government in 10 years down the line, 100%. I think we can grow massively. Like I said, there's an appetite for change, progressive new style of politics. In terms of my personal ambitions for leadership, I don't have personal ambitions for leadership. I have personal ambitions for change. I suppose in saying that, I didn't have a personal ambition to be a councillor or a TD either. So, you know, sometimes politics does happen to you.
And from speaking to you, Holly Kearns, you have incredible self-belief. You know, you saw yourself as being elected in the local elections, as being elected in the general election. Do you have any ambitions to be maybe the first female Taoiseach?
When you say I have incredible self-belief, it's actually, I have an incredible belief in the Irish public. And like that, being told, oh, your constituency would never elect somebody progressive. You know, it's very conservative down there, that kind of thing. I have belief in Irish people wanting something more progressive and wanting a new style of politics. Irish politics has not kept up with Irish people. And like I said, I being honest, I don't have an ambition to be the Taoiseach or to be the leader of anything. That's just the truth. And I'm not saying I would never do it, but I don't, you know, hope for that or work towards that.
And what are you working towards?
Building the party. Like, I really do want to see a new style of politics now, and that's why I got involved in politics, and that realisation that the way to do that, we can change. We're ahead on so many things, and we've seen that with our social referendums. We just need to start voting for that progression when we're voting in our local and general elections too. But without an option to do that, how can you ask people to do it? So it's really, it feels like, and I'm, you know, I remember thinking that, like, oh my God, now six TDs, even though we've tripled, it's amazing. But that's the reality. To go from 2 to 6, that's a huge jump. Mm-hmm. To go from 0 to 19 councillors, that's a huge jump. Of course we can do it. And yes, we'll be told that we can't. And there'll be, you know, there's no point in voting for that party because they won't do it. If everybody said that, if one person said that about me in the local election, I wouldn't have got in because I got in by one vote. You know, and you can affect change as one person. Mm. So how much can you affect, you know, the amount that Roisin and Catherine managed to do as 2 TDs in the last all, things like the parental leave bill. Of course we can do more as 6 TDs, and of course we can build the party from there. You can't go, oh, it's not possible to affect change and leave it at that. You have to try. And so far it's been very successful. So I'm very hopeful.
Okay, well, I think that is a good place to leave it for today, changing the face of Irish politics. Holly Kearns, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. Well, that's it for this special edition of Your Politics podcast. If you like the podcast, you can subscribe or leave a review. But for now, thanks for listening.